Today is Tuesday, October the 9th, and this is Kathy bringing you the news from Vermilion County, starting with the commercial news. The headline reads, Alderman to Act on Funds for Flexengate. Flexengate officials announced this summer a planned expansion for its Danville facility that is expected to add at least 100 jobs and benefit at least 51 low to moderate income persons. Alderman will act tonight on approving Flexengate utilize $80,000 in community development block grant funds to assist with machinery for the expansion. According to project information, Flexengate at 3403 Lynch Creek Drive has been awarded a new manufacturing business from Ford and Toyota to build plastic upper and lower grills. To accommodate for new equipment and machinery, a 55,000 square foot addition to the existing 52,000 square foot facility is needed. The site is located in the Danville-Vermilion County Enterprise Zone. Total investment is estimated at more than $18 million, with $8 million being new equipment. Parts will be shipped to Michigan and Indiana. The CDBG funds would go toward the purchase of an injection molding machine. The project, which has a target occupancy date of September 2019, is expected to have full employment of an additional 135 full-time employees by March of 2021. The company currently employs 134 full-time employees. The additional payroll would be about $4.3 million. The average wage of employees is $15 per hour plus benefits. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity already approved $1.198 million in economic development for a growing economy tax credit program, also known as EDGE, tax credits for Flexengate Plastics Corporation's Danville project. According to Bill Beeslein, Vice President for Flexengate Venture Procurement, depending on the final number of injection machines, the investment for the expansion will be between $18 million and $25 million. The financial assistance would reduce logistics costs, ease talent recruitment, and reduce insurance costs, according to Flexengate officials. Flexengate incurs less cost for labor, workers' compensation, and unemployment insurance at its Vetersburg, Indiana plant. Beeslein says we should start some of the civil work as early as late this week. Flexengate is a leading manufacturer and supplier of large stamped metal and welded components, assemblies, and plastic parts for the automotive industry. In other business tonight, the Public Works Committee is expected to hear a storm water management update and will begin reviewing the city's proposed 2018 tax levy and fiscal year 2019-2020 budget. Also Tuesday, committee members will consider, first, authorizing application for up to $200,000 in Safe Routes to School funding through the Illinois Department of Transportation to improve pedestrian safety and movements generated by Mark Denman and Northeast Elementary Schools. The improvements include crosswalk improvements on Griffin Street at English Street and sidewalk and ramp improvements on portions of English, Griffin, Fairchild, and Maple Streets. The city would perform surveying and engineering work as its share of the project. A $61,850 contract for Phase 1 engineering services by Clark Dietz Incorporated of Champaign for a downtown lighting and sound system. Action on this item by the full city council had been postponed, with the scope of the work also adjusted. The agreement had been for $34,750. Danville Community Development Manager David Schnell has said that the agreement was for budgets, conceptual designs, and other initial planning for a programmable system. He also previously said the project would be led by Clark Dietz, but designed by sub-consultants. The work would be paid with downtown tax increment financing funds. It had been proposed to be paid through the city's community development professional services budget and a line item transfer from personal expenditures. The city had a planner resign. Purchasing 5 properties in the county tax auction from the Vermilion County Trustee for the minimum bid and recording fee of $789 per property. The properties are at 2620 East Main Street, which would be utilized for Mead Park, blight removal at 306 and 308 Oak Street, 517 Lafayette, and 520 West Madison, which would be used with other property already owned by the city for redevelopment, and 129 North Vermilion Street. This property was to be a gelato shop many years ago. The city owns the other lot that makes up the property on which the building sits. Next, amending terms of electric franchise agreement with Ameren Illinois Company, and purchasing permanent easement of 707 South Griffin Street from Jason Hilliard to replace the sanitary sewer crossing of Stony Creek near South Griffin Street. The purchase will be paid for from the City Sewer Enterprise Fund Infrastructure Improvement line item. This next headline reads, VA offers services to prevent suicide, by Mary Wyckoff. Suicide prevention is the number one mental health priority for the Department of Veterans Affairs, including the Ileana healthcare system. In 2007, the Suicide Prevention Program was started, and the number of suicide prevention services has increased since then, officials say. When it comes to mental health services, the VA is second to none, said Nicole Gorman, Suicide Prevention Coordinator at Ileana. Across the country, VA staff is mandated to make at least 5 outreach efforts a month to increase awareness of suicide prevention. However, Ileana is first in the nation, with staff making about 45 outreach efforts a month. That includes traveling to 30 counties in Ileana's service area and speaking at veteran town halls, neighborhood groups, and fairs, as well as the recent mental health summit. There were more than 6,000 veteran suicides a year from 2008 to 2016, according to the VA's National Suicide Data Report. In the Ileana system, 2 enrolled veterans committed suicide in fiscal year 2018, Gorman said, adding that we're aware of. Gorman said the suicide rate is highest among the young male veterans 18 to 34 and is lowest among male veterans ages 55 to 74. However, older veterans represented the greatest share of suicide deaths in 2016, accounting for 58.1% of suicide deaths due to the larger population. Gorman also noted that the use of a firearm to commit suicide is common. In 2016, 69.4% of veteran suicides resulted from a firearm injury. That figure is up from 2015, when 67% of the veterans used a gun. As a result, the VA is focused on preventing self-harm by firearm. Free gun locks are available at several places at the Danville VA, including at the entrances of Building 58 and 98 and in the primary care waiting rooms. Lethal means safety training is provided to 14 departments outside of mental health, Gorman said. The staff isn't trying to take guns away, but to make sure they're safely stored and have gun locks. When a gun is locked, that gives a veteran time to stop and think twice about what he or she is doing. Another VA mandate is that mental health services must be offered to eligible veterans within 1 year of discharge. It's then up to the veteran whether to pursue the services. Veterans may call the National Crisis Line as well. It's no longer called a suicide line because a veteran might have a different crisis in his life. For example, a veteran might be despondent over financial woes, legal action, relationship problems, or job loss. Or he might have trouble adjusting to civilian life after years in the military. Veterans who call the crisis line aren't necessarily talking about suicide. Sometimes they just don't know where else to turn. Many veterans may not show any signs of intent to harm themselves before doing so, but some actions can be a sign that a person needs help, according to the Veterans Crisis Line website. Here are some of the warning signs. Appearing sad or depressed most of the time. Hopelessness, feeling like there's no way out. Anxiety, agitation, sleeplessness or mood swings. Feelings as if there's no reason to live. Feeling excessive guilt, shame, or sense of failure. Rage or anger. Engaging in risky activities without thinking. Losing interest in hobbies, work, or school. Increasing alcohol or drug misuse. Neglecting personal welfare, a deteriorating physical appearance. Withdrawing from family and friends. Showing violent behavior like punching a hole in the wall or getting into fights. Giving away prized possessions, getting affairs in order, tying up loose ends, or writing a will. This headline reads, Biggest Battle of Their Lives. Vet calls attention to the high suicide rate. Georgetown. Cars honk as they pass, and sometimes people stop to shake the hand of Leighton Worsler, an Army veteran who's camped out on Main Street. The outpouring of support for his cause has been pretty positive, he said, adding, This is a pretty veteran-friendly community. Worsler, a Georgetown native, is camping out for 22 days in an effort to draw attention to the national average of 22 veteran suicides a day. He's also placing 22 flags a day at his campsite to help people visualize the numbers. By October 22nd, there will be 484 flags. We have to stop ignoring veteran suicide and pretend it doesn't exist and let someone else do something, he said. Military people shouldn't have to go overseas and fight a war and then fight the biggest battle of their lives when they return. People need to notice the signs that a veteran might be suffering and simply ask, do you need someone to talk to and sit with? Just notice and be aware, he said. While Wersler was sitting in the back of his truck on a recent day, a couple of young men who understand the sacrifices made by soldiers walked up to him. They introduced themselves as Kenneth 13 and Brandon 12, sons of Sergeant Kenneth Nichols, Jr., who died on December 1st in 2009 while on patrol in Afghanistan. The boys shook Wersler's hand in appreciation for what he's doing. Beside those simply saying thanks, people stop and ask Wersler if he needs anything to eat, and often older veterans will stop and chat. Wersler, 28, served in the Army from 2008 to 12 and did a tour in Iraq. He struggles with PTSD, depression, and anxiety. At first he tried to escape through alcohol, but discovered that that ruins relationships with friends and family. Wersler, who's finance officer with the Georgetown American Legion, had been thinking about a public campaign on suicide awareness for some time. Last January, he wanted to camp out on the city square, but the city denied permission. A friend mentioned the lot at 7th and Main in front of Joe Bob's meat shop. With the owner's permission, Wersler left home with just his tent. He's been homeless in the past, so this experience also calls attention to the problem of veteran homelessness. I wanted to put myself in that situation, he said. I have the means and the ability to feed myself, but I chose not to. People have been generous about bringing him food and water. While he wants to call attention to the issue of homelessness, the problem of suicide is his main focus, he said. Homelessness we can work on, but we can't bring someone back. The average number of 22 suicides a day may fluctuate some, but it's not going down enough to make a difference. Some statistics put it at 20 suicides a day. A lot of people who stop are shocked by the numbers, he said. Something needs to be done, and the younger vets need to pick up the torch carried by the older veterans. Nobody has picked it up and run with it, he said. We think someone else will do it. Stephen Weaver, who went to Georgetown Ridge Farm High School with Wersler, visits when he can. I think he's doing a good thing. I support him no matter what, Weaver said. He added, I think it's good that people realize what's going on. Wersler wants to take his message across the country, saying, I don't want it to be a flame that burns out at the city limits. When he does end his campaign on October 22nd, he can go home knowing that he made his intentions known and that he has had an impact on people. There are quite a few obituaries today, so I'm going to get those done so we don't miss those. Starting with Terry Carpenter. Terry D. Carpenter, 64, of Danville, finished his last ride on October 4th, 2018 at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. A celebration of Terry's life will be at 10 a.m. Friday, October 12th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. A visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 11th, at the funeral home. Deborah Macy. Deborah Macy, 63, of Danville, went to be with her Lord and Savior on Thursday morning, October 4th, after a short stay at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman. A celebration of Deb's life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, October 11th, at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Chapel, 200 East West Street in Georgetown. Pastor Kenneth Young will officiate. Burial will follow at Georgetown Cemetery. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at the funeral home. Donna Clay. Donna Clay, 64, of Homer, passed away at 2:49 p.m. Saturday, October 6th, 2018. A celebration of life will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Monty J. Tarr in Catlin. Monty J. Tarr, 70, of Catlin, passed away at 12:06 a.m. October 8th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. Family services at First Presbyterian Church of Danville with Pastor Ann Swartz officiating. Robinson Chapel in Catlin is handling the service details. The date and time of those services is not listed in the obituary, but you could find that out probably by going to the obituary section online. Nancy Kusick. Nancy Kusick, 84, of Danville, passed away peacefully, surrounded by her family in the morning of October 6, 2018. A celebration of Nancy's life will be at 3 p.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at the Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. A visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. at the funeral home prior to the service. Private entombment, it will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Carol Faye Myers. Carol Faye Myers, 85, of Westville, passed away at 11:40 a.m. Sunday, October 7th, with her family by her side at the Colonial Manor Nursing Home in Danville. A celebration of Carol's life will be at 6 p.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street in Westville, with Pastor James Blue officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday prior to her service at the funeral home. She will later be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Rayfield Johnson. Rayfield Ray Johnson, 93, of Danville, Illinois, passed away Friday, September 28th at Garden View Manor in Tilton. A celebration of Ray's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 10th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. A visitation will begin 1 hour prior to the service. He will be laid to rest in Spring Hill Cemetery. Peggy Mason. Peggy Antonia Mason, transformed from this life to glory, surrounded by her family at 2:45 p.m. Wednesday, October 3rd, in Danville, Illinois. Peggy will be cremated upon her request. A memorial service will be at 1 p.m. Monday, October the 8th, at Winter Park in Danville. And I'm going to add a couple on here that are in the News Gazette. LaViante Kreider, 20, of Danville, died at 9:40 a.m. Saturday at home on October the 6th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek and Sons Funeral Home on William Street in Danville. Linda DePoe from Ambia, Indiana. Linda DePoe, 73, of Ambia, Indiana, died at 12:20 Friday, October 5th, at the Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center. Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston, is in charge of the arrangements. Frank Green, Hoopston. Frank Lee Skip Green, 87, of Hoopston, died at 12:35 p.m. Sunday, October 7th, at Watsika Rehab and Health Care Center. Funeral services for the Navy veteran will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at the Hoopston United Methodist Church, 403 East Main Street in Hoopston. Steve Unger will officiate. Burial will be in Rossville Cemetery in Rossville. Military rites will be accorded by the Hoopston American Legion Post 384. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. A Masonic service will be at 6:45 p.m. And also in the News Gazette on the front page of their paper, opening for mayor job draws a crowd. Four aldermen interested in an interim gig after Eisenhower exits post. From Danville by Tracy Crane. At least four aldermen have already expressed interest in being Danville's interim mayor, setting the stage for what could become a contentious process to choose Scott Eisenhower's successor. Because you're getting into personalities and stuff, said Alderman Steve Foster, who'd only be interested in the temp job if his fellow council members can't reach a consensus on the other three aldermen who want to run the city until a new mayor is elected next spring. So far, Ricky Williams Jr., Steve Nichols, and Mike Purr have told fellow aldermen they're interested in the interim job that is likely to officially come open on November 5th. The day that four-term Mayor Scott Eisenhower is expected to report for work as Rantoul's new village administrator. The Rantoul Village Board is expected to approve Eisenhower's hiring tonight. A week from today, Danville's 14 aldermen are scheduled to meet to nominate an interim mayor. It's a process that Foster and others believe should take place in closed session, with a final vote happening in public, a synopsis of who's in and who's out. Williams, the executive director of Project Success, said he not only wants the job for the final 6 months of Eisenhower's term, but also plans to run for the office in April. It's a dream, Williams said, he has had since 1996, when he was a Danville High School student participating in a youth leadership summit. Williams has run for mayor once before, challenging Eisenhower in 2011, along with two others, Jim McMahon and David Quick. He finished third in the four-way race. I've spoken to my project success board about it, and they have supported me retaining my position and serving as interim mayor, Williams said Monday. If he's chosen as interim mayor, Williams said he'd work 4 very long days a week in that position and devote the remaining weekday evenings and Saturdays to project success. My board assured me that they are confident in the leadership I've shown that I would be able to maintain both, Williams said. Nichols, who also has a full-time job, has interest in being mayor both for the short and long term as well. It's something I've always thought about doing, but I didn't want to run against Scott Eisenhower, Nichols said. Lloyd Randall is interested in running for mayor in April, but has not told fellow aldermen he wants the interim job. Poor, who's retired but remains very active in the community, said he has the time to devote to being interim mayor, but he has no interest in the position beyond that. Poor said he believes it's critical that the city tap someone with experience to be interim mayor, and not someone who's thinking about their candidacy while at the same time dealing with the city's upcoming budget and property tax levy process. We need to make some tough decisions in the interim, and anyone running for full or part-time mayor who's on the council, I'm afraid, would be more worried about their decision-making affecting the outcome in the spring election, Poor said. The interim mayor would also lead the council in selecting its first city manager should voters approve a November 6th referendum to change Danville's form of government from the current strong mayor council to city manager's council. It's going to be interesting, Poor said. The interim mayor is going to have a very difficult time and has to commit a lot of time. Nichols said he disagrees with Poor on the qualifications for the interim job, saying, I don't think we can afford a caretaker mayor. Nichols said he doesn't believe in serving as interim mayor would give him or anyone else an advantage in the April election, considering the city's cash flow issues and the difficulties that will create in the budget process. Nichols recently transitioned from his longtime position as district manager overseeing 10 Steak and Shake restaurants to store manager at the North Vermilion Street location, which he said would give him the flexibility needed to be interim mayor. He said he would not quit his job to be interim mayor, especially given the uncertainty of the mayor's position beyond April. Depending on what voters do in November, mayor would either be a part-time $5,000 a year position if the city manager proposal is approved, or remain a full-time job, which pays $73,000 now and would be bumped to $75,000 in May. Nichols said he has talked with his employer about being interim mayor. If nominated, he would work days at the city and nights and weekends managing the restaurant. It's something I've really wanted to do, and this is a good opportunity to do it, Nichols said of being mayor. I just feel like I have the best experience overall and the right temperament. Foster said he's told aldermen that he believes anyone interested in running for the 4-year term shouldn't be selected for the interim position. In all fairness, they should have the advantage of being interim, Foster said. I just want to make sure we have a smooth transition. David Wiesner, corporate counsel for the city, said there's nothing legally spelling out how much time a mayor must spend at the office, whether he comes into the job by nomination or election. But, Wiesner added, they are the CEO of this company, and so they have to be putting the time in to manage, and you cannot manage if you are not in the office. While aldermen's discussion about the interim mayor could be held behind closed doors next week, the actual vote would be held in open session. Illinois' Open Meetings Act in Illinois has several exceptions, including one for selecting a person to fill a public office when the public body has the power to appoint under law or ordinance, which is the case here. But the Act goes on to state that exceptions authorize but do not require the holding of a closed meeting to a subject included in the list of exceptions. But Wiesner said, you really don't want this kind of discussion occurring out in the opening session. What if, for instance, none of the aldermen interested can get the minimum 8 votes required and none of them want to withdraw, Wiesner said. The reason for having the discussion in a closed session, he said, is not a matter of trying to hide who the candidates are or their backgrounds. It's just not having the potential argument and name-calling as you try to figure out who the candidate is going to be. And this article from the local section of the News Gazette from Danville High School. As easy as grab and go. Quick meal cart rate of students eating breakfast. Kyra Ray is not a morning person. The Danville High School sophomore said she usually wakes up about 10 minutes before she catches her 7:40 a.m. bus to school. That gives her enough time to dress, sweep her hair into a messy bun, and grab her backpack. And breakfast? I don't usually eat it, Ray said. but that's changed since the high school introduced its new grab-and-go cart, parked up the ramp and around the corner from the main clock tower entrance. On a recent day, Ray stopped by the cart and picked up a box of Trix cereal, a carton of milk, and a Pop-Tart on her way to her Consumer's Ed class. Almost everyone passes by it to get to their class, kitchen helper Tammy Kuhn said of the cart, which is open from 7 a.m. to 9:15 a.m. daily. Students can still get a variety of hot and cold breakfast items in the cafeteria in the basement in the morning, Kuhn said. But if they're running late and don't have time to go downstairs, they can grab something from here on their way to class. It's really convenient. The school was able to establish the cart with a $5,500 No Kid Hungry grant, said Food Service Director Sue Barnes. The grant funded all of the equipment, including a computer, a scanner for student IDs, and a smoothie machine. That's the big thing right now, Barnes said, adding it's not uncommon for kitchen supervisor Kim King to make 80 to 90 smoothies a day. We make them with fresh fruit and yogurt, and we slip in some vegetables, too. Other items include a variety of cereal and Pop-Tarts, yogurt, granola bars, string cheese, juice, and milk. I also had some pumpkin bread, but it went fast, Kuhn said Tuesday. Breakfast items are free. Students have to pay for the items only if they've already eaten in the cafeteria that morning. Since opening the cart, Barnes said breakfast participation has gone from 14% to 27% this year. We like to see everyone having breakfast since it's the most important meal of the day, she said. According to a survey by the Food Research and Action Center National Association of Secondary School Principals, Barnes said eating breakfast helps to cut down on tardiness, discipline problems, and visits to the school nurse, while also helping to increase student attendance, attentiveness, and improving the student school environment, among other things. Principal Kimberly Norton said that students are allowed to eat the food in class during the first 10 minutes if they've arrived after the bell has rung. Our teachers have been 100% supportive with no complaints, she said, adding that they want their kids fueled up in the morning so they can work to their full potential. If students miss the meal, they won't likely eat until lunch, which could be anywhere from 10:44 to 1:06, depending on their assigned period. Around 8:30 a.m., the smoothies and granola bars, along with the pumpkin bread, were long gone. Freshman Farah Dower browsed the remaining items before selecting a juice. I normally get a lot more, but I had breakfast at Hardee's today, she said. I don't have time to eat at home, and I usually don't want to eat that early, continued Dower, whose first class begins at 7:20 a.m. I like coming down here before second period. It's easy. And for the Schlarman sectional, Redskins' worst round still good for victory, by Colin Linkus. The number read the same, exactly the same. Sullivan Boys Golf compiled a 339 team total at Monday's Class 1A Schlarman Sectional. It was also their result in the last season's sectional tournament. In 2017, it meant the Redskins were 12 shots short of advancing to state. In 2018, it meant they were champions. Caden Eldis' 76 tied him for second place and keyed Sullivan to a two-stroke triumph over runner-up Tri-Valley, 339 to 341 at the Danville Country Club. The catch regarding the Redskins' scorecard, it goes down as their worst round of the campaign. It's obviously not the way we wanted to win, but we're really happy with the effort the guys put out, Sullivan coach Ben Richter said. Things weren't really going our way, but we found a way to survive the course and to come through. Sophomores Leighton Ellis, 85, and Drew Rogers, 88, complimented the effort of senior Caden Ellis, who tied for 12th at last year's state tournament. Prior to Monday's action, Ellis headed all local competition with a 35.7 average per nine holes. He's a perfect example for a six-athlete lineup of three seniors and three sophomores. He's got the best mentality for a leader on the golf team, Richter said. He's calm and collected. He just does a great job of showing the younger guys what it looks like to work at something to achieve it. But he isn't working alone. Leighton Ellis, Rogers seniors Leighton Burcham and Tim Lawyer, and sophomore Logan Westjohn all witnessed the Redskins falling short of a team state berth 364 days prior. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed the readings from both the Commercial News and the News Gazette. This is Kathy signing off on October the 9th, 2018. Have a great day.